I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything.
Joining me this morning is Ron Reyes. Ron, first of all, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. How you doing?
I've been worse, right? I mean, it's a little bit like Groundhog Day, but staying home and washing my hands, I can do that. So if you don't follow directions very well, you might have a tough time. But for, if you can, I mean, I think the I think there's a lot of anxiety among people, certainly because of, you know, everybody's future is up in the air financially, or a lot of people's future is up in the air financially. And so, I guess I'm doing all right. I mean, there's a lot of people that have it worse than I do. So, I count my blessings. How about you, Ron? I mean, how's this thing impacted your life?
Everything happens and it just comes out of the blue, right? Yeah. But I got to say, I've been the busiest I've ever been. I've got a few different projects working, and I spend my time really not watching much TV or doing anything else, but focusing on some things that I've been wanting to do for a long time. Otherwise, I'm going to go crazy sitting here. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, so that's us and, you know, the family here. We're all great. And we're just, you know, keeping our distance, enjoying each other and getting through it, and we'll get through it together and see how we all come out on the other side.
That'll be, but you know, it's interesting, you know, and this I'm sure is interesting for you. You know, Ron's a Gold Star son. And so in his life, you know, he knows what it is, you know, to pay for the nation's bills in a way that a lot of us, you know, certainly don't. And now the nation is having to learn the whole concept of collective sacrifice. And it's a lot of people aren't taking it very well, Ron. And so it must be an interesting, you know, kind of a spot for you. And I've heard a lot of veterans say it, and I've thought it myself. It's like, it's kind of interesting is now everybody's forced to do uncomfortable things, not just a few people, and to see kind of the shock in a lot of places, because we don't do this anymore. We live our lives on our terms. Unless you have somebody serving in the war that have gone on since 2001, they don't really impact you. They certainly don't inconvenience you. You go about your life exactly the way you want to. And the fact that life would rear its ugly head and intrude into your life is, a huge shock for some. So I'm sure that in some way, shape, or form, you're sharing a little bit of that with the rest of us.
I mean, sure. It's, you know, again, you're right. I mean, it's a sacrifice we live with every day and that we are in touch with. And so, you know, generally something happens in the world and we send our people off, and it's a thought, and it's not a daily thought for most of us. And today we are immersed in a worldwide situation. So it's forefront, you know, that we have to deal. Otherwise, we live pretty great lives, right? So right. We don't have to think about it. And we have a lot of people overseas doing what they got to do. So, I think it's a small taste of what people need to do, what kind of sacrifice they have to make.
Now, you came on today to talk about something. So, first of all, explain to everybody the significance of March 30th every year for you.
Well, this is my day. This is a big day for me and my family. But it's 52 years ago today that my father was killed in action on a small outcropping called the Rock Quarry, little over a kilometer outside the gates of Quezon Air Base, while he was trying to help his Marine brother, who had been severely injured. And so that's the day that my father lost his life. I was about a month old at that point. And so this is the day that we used to be a very painful day, and it's really changed, you know, in the last several years. I say the last 5 years, it's become Well, it's only a place I could probably explain it here. It's always going to be a bad experience, but I try to – what can we do to make it a positive experience? What are we going to do to make a legacy of a fallen Marine? I could sit here and cry every year about it. It's not going to change what happened 52 years ago. So it's a day that I reflect, and I'm also thankful. I'm here because of my father, you know. Quite frankly, as he was probably going off to war, and with my mom, here I am, right? So
right.
So that's where I'm at. That's today, thinking about it. And for me also thinking about that I've been there twice now. I've stood on that ground twice. I've touched that red dirt, you know. And so it has a different – kind of a different feeling as well, because I can put myself there. You know, not in the same conditions, obviously. So, and I know that that dirt sits up on your shelf there too.
Yes, I'm looking at it right now, man. Yeah, let me just tell you, Ron and I went to dinner, right? And with Richard Garcia, and Ron was introducing me to Richard. And so we meet, you know, in Garden Grove at a Mexican food place. And when we sit down, he says, he looks at Richard and he says, here you go, man. And I look at this – now, Richard's a corpsman, okay? So in the hierarchy of – even though we love our corpsman, you know, I don't want to say anything bad, okay? But Richard's on the periphery. He's a squid, man. So I'm sitting there, and I said, what's that? And Ron looks at me, and he goes, oh, that's dirt from Quezon. I said, what? I said, wait a minute. In front of me, you're giving a squid dirt from Quezon? Are you fucking out of your mind? Like, and I think I grabbed a knife off the table. I'm like, let me just tell you, this aggression will not fucking stand, man. Everyone's like, calm the fuck down, man. I got more dirt. I'm like, well, no shit. And so the next time I saw him down at Camp Pendleton, he brought me this this container of dirt that sits next to sand from Iwo Jima. And inside, there's a Marine Corps emblem on the top of the container, and it's kind of a, like a pressure closed thing with a metal clasp. And inside the dirt, there's an enlisted emblem, dressed blue emblem. And so it's one of my treasured things. And so, but hey, Ron, if you don't mind, for people that don't know your story.
Sure.
You lived – I just want to recap it in about 5 minutes. You lived with – you lived as a Gold Star son, and then I just want to talk about some really important events in your life. The okay. first event that puts you on this road is you finding
– all my dad's Marine brothers.
Okay. Now, is that before or after you find Gold Star – Kids or whatever that organization is.
No, that is before. So, you know, again, I've been on two journeys, and I thought we've gone through this talk a lot.
There's been a lot of legs on this one journey, man. So.
Right. And all the times that I quit and saying that I'm done and I've figured out everything I'm going to figure out and the journey's over, right? So it's been continually going on. Real quickly, in the mid-90s, after the moment my daughter was born in 95, I had decided that I was totally – I mean in the second, I was completely at peace with never knowing anything about my father in Vietnam, never having one bit of information, just, you know, scouring documentaries and books. And so that's how it went. And then in 98, when my son was about to be born, I had done where'd I go? Quezon, the Quezon Survivors Association, their webpage in 98, right? So there's hardly anything on there. I threw out some emails on my new fancy computer, and by chance that weekend, the 1st Battalion, 9th Marines had a reunion in New Orleans and handed out this printout of my email. And the following week is when I connected with not just people who knew my father, one went to boot camp. No, one was in infantry training with them and ended up in Vietnam with them and had met my grandparents. But the two men that really, really stuck out for me was the man that my dad went to go with to help save his fallen brother, Pete Mestis, and then Tommy T. Wallace, who's the one that was injured. And I didn't think he survived. So that started a little chain of events. I was able to speak in front of the 1-9, like 2,000 2, I think. And that was it. Put it all to bed. Lifelong friends and brothers with my dad's brothers. And it's always been private. It's my thing. It's I call them. They call me.
But see, what Ronnie didn't realize is he belongs to us. He didn't know that. And so the story, if you go back and listen to the first interview that I did with Ron, he talks about when these guys see him, right, and their reaction to him. And he was like, holy shit, man. I do belong to these guys, man. I'm a part of this, which is really cool. Now, that was after you had already been hooked up into the Gold Star Kids thing?
No, so then it went away and never thought about it again. That was it.
All right.
It was done. I was over. You know, I have my contacts. I thought I said everything I needed to say and meet who I needed to meet, right?
Right.
Including the people who were there for, you know, with my dad in the final moments of his life. And then 2000, I don't know, 14, 13, somewhere in there. That was it. This story, so there's so much to it. My daughter was going to school at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and her dorm was 3 blocks north of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And I'd already been there. I had been there with the 1-9 on a reunion previously, several years earlier. And we went down there, and they were adding names to the wall, and which they don't do very often, but they were adding some or changing some classifications. And there was a bunch of seats. There's like 300 seats down there, and it was a lot of buzz and media. And we walked down there, and I turned around to my daughter, and I said, no, let's stay up here. That's for them. And my daughter looks at me like I was crazy. She's like, what are you talking about? Your dad's name's on the wall. You belong down there with everybody else. And I'm like, no, this is not for us.
Thankfully, there's somebody smart in this family.
You should have saw. I mean, the look on her face was completely puzzled. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Exactly.
Dad?
Right. Exactly.
And so, at that point, you know, I went through the whole thing, and I was just very attentive and just kind of listened to everything going on. And at the end of it, so it was a good thing to stand back there. I went over to somebody from the wall, VVMF, introduced myself. I don't know what I said in the 3 minutes, but they were crying. They introduced me to somebody else. I did the same thing. 3 minutes later, they're crying. They said, I got to connect you with somebody in California that does fundraising for us, which they did. So that's the end of 2013. It's like May, I think, Mother's Day, I believe. And then they connected me here in California, and she saw, I know this organization. And so that was by the time I connected with the organization, it was like 2014. And it just so happens they were founded here, Sons and Daughters in Touch. And it's a group of Gold Star sons and daughters that were born back in like 91, 92. They were in Parade magazine. They've been all over, but I'd never heard about them. And that one conversation started my next step of the journey. And so then in 2015, I went to Father's Day. 5 years ago. We have it every 5 years. I haven't heard about this year, but it's not looking good. But every 5 years. And so I went from knowing no Gold Star sons or daughters to being in touch with hundreds of them in one place. And it kind of just started a chain of events. And
why was that important to you? Because you had lived this thing alone, right? I mean,
on an island. Absolutely.
You didn't know any other kids that went through what you did. Right. I remember, heartbreaking stuff. You saying that I'd never made a Father's Day card in my life.
Never. Never. With the exception of occasionally to my mom.
That's awesome.
She's pretty badass. But,
exactly.
But no, Father's Day was like, well, this sucks. Because, back in the 70s growing up as a kid, you always had these projects in school and doing stuff. And Father's Day, just normal talk. We never talked about Vietnam War. We never talked about anything. It was a quiet thing, not on purpose.
Out of necessity for the love of God.
Out of necessity. And then when I look at my mom and the strength that she has, and we keep talking about this, but we got to bring her on board. I always tell her after the fact that I'm on the radio.
When do I get to meet your mom, man? Where does she live?
Ventura County. She's an hour and a half from us.
Well, the next time she comes down, man, call me.
I will. I'll put that in because she's a whole story in herself.
Oh, I want to meet. She's a badass, man. I want to meet your mom.
So anyway, you know, you're dealing with Father's Day and never meeting that, no one ever having that same story, or just, you know, how do you relate? It's interesting, though, that when I was a kid in elementary school, I connected with – we are the first generation of latchkey kids, right? Our parents worked. So all my friends had single mothers, but their fathers were just either non-existent or divorced. So we had kind of a similar bond, but we never really talked about it. We just hung out and got in a lot of trouble.
There you go.
We're unbridled. We could do whatever we want. No cell phones, you know, just take off. So I never talked about it really, with the exception of family and some friends. And even that, not so much, until I made this connection. And it was at that moment. And even when I made a connection, I wasn't real public about it. And then on Father's Day, I just unloaded and it came out. And friends on Facebook were like, I didn't even know. And I've known you for 30 plus years. You never talk about it. And then it's become a flat out mission. I mean, from that, then we'll just speed ahead. I walked in and I'd already made some buzz because I was already a little bit vocal about, you know, my journey. And a friend whose father is still missing in action, Jill Hubbs, works for PBS out of Pensacola, Florida, wanted to interview a lot of people. And so she messaged me. I had never met her. Walked up and she had a makeshift studio set up and I did an interview. And that turned into be one of I was one of the more featured interviews in there. I think there were six of us and there's a whole bunch of other interviews, but the six kind of stood out. And that became part of the documentary that was broadcast nationally on PBS called They Were Our Fathers. And it's about going to Father's Day and what we do with SDIT, Sons and Daughters in Touch, every 5 years in Washington, D.C. And so that was done. Then I watched was in a seminar that just happened to be in because I didn't leave the previous one that we were – because it was like a little – you know, we have seminars and breakout sessions. And somebody got up, Margot Carlson Delonia, and she was talking about her father also still missing in action, about putting a trip together to Vietnam. But a trip that normally takes 2 years to plan of any size like this, she was going to do it by December, and we're in June. So in less than 6 months, she's going to put this trip together. And the crux of this trip is, well, first of all, I wanted to go to Vietnam. I was like, whoa, okay. I stood up first, and I said, I got to go. I don't know how I'm going to get the money. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going. But the other part of that trip was we were going to, for the first time, meet with the sons and daughters of those men that were killed fighting against us.
I have to stop you because now – so that is – what I want Ron to do is tell you about his journey, okay? But – if you want to hear that in the whole story in detail, just do a search on his name. And I swear to God, there's a 90-minute version of what he's trying to condense for you. Okay? But what I wanted Ron to paint for you was, here's this young guy, and he lives on his own with this. And then he connects to Marine veterans who manhandle his ass when they meet him. Right?
Yeah, right. True, absolutely.
This is Ronnie Reyes's kid. Right. Right. What?
That's exactly it.
Right. And another yeah. Bear hug and a right. And a tackle and whatnot. What'd you guys? Who's this? This is Ronnie. And it's like, oh, my right. God. And so he has that experience. Then he connects with all these Gold Star kids and he has these incredible experiences that, you know, that along this journey that are just, I don't know, leave me speechless, Ron, when you talk about them. But today's another chapter of it. And so I want to cut to today. I want you to tell everybody how this trip continues and how you continue to become what I call, you know, a post-traumatic winner. That in the aftermath of trauma, right, Ron gets it that you're never going to get over it. And the only thing you can do is use your pain to help other people. And he's an example of it by helping as you transform the lives of other people, right? Ron has transformed his own life, and to the point where he would say, now this day, instead of being just a day of pain and remembrance, has changed complexions. And I think it's just cooler than shit. So tell everybody what you got going now there, crazy one.
Sure. And that's exactly it, is to forever change this day into something else, right? But I'm going to start with one thing. So at the dinner, after you just about jumped over the table and stabbed me with a plastic knife in the neck because I didn't bring you dirt.
It wasn't that you just didn't bring me dirt. It's in front of me. You gave dirt to a corpsman. What the fuck? What just happened? And I love chicken enchiladas, and they almost went over, head over, ass over tea kettle.
But there's something that stood out as we were having this conversation, and it has stuck with me from that day. I use it, I share it, I credit where it comes from and why, and I've heard other people now start to use it. And that is, you said, turning trauma into joy. And for people who haven't been able to get to that spot yet, that's a really tough thing to kind of figure out. When you said it, I was like,
fuck you.
Holy shit. That's – no. When you
well,
said
that's normally the dominant reaction.
Well, right. Well, yeah. No, that's you, why – that I get. That was my point, is that, you know, when you say that, people are like, well, what's it – you have no clue. I'm in pain. But when you said it to me in that moment, and you couldn't have said that to me 5 years earlier, I would have done the same thing. But when you said it, it resonated in a way that I said, that's the way I had to view it from now on. In that moment, even though things had already changed, in that moment, from now on, I have to think of it differently. Because – and life has changed. So – and that's where we're going to get. So I'll get to it, and then I'll kind of –
Well, let me just tell you, that's the name of the book.
What, Turning Trauma into Joy?
Yeah, Trauma to Joy, right? Yeah. Post-traumatic winning. Right. What? Hold on. Let me read you the full title, because I. And what's really interesting is when people who don't understand it hear that, right?
Right.
When they hear that, but they hear it from somebody like you, Ronnie, or they hear it from a kid, a Lance Corporal by the name of Matt Kiker, who. His father committed suicide on the phone with he and his mom and his brother when he was 9 years old. Wow. One of his best friends hung himself when he's in sixth grade. His brother commits suicide right right after he joins the Marine Corps. Then he goes home to bury him, and he finds out that his brother was sleeping with his fiance.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, stop. All right? This is not real. Right, because what do you like, you know, the great grandson of Job, for God's sakes? You know, this tale is crazy. But it was all true. When somebody like that, when people hear people like you say it, when people hear somebody like Matt Kiker say that, how you can turn trauma into joy, it absolutely freezes them. It absolutely freezes them. And the book is Trauma to Joy, the story of post-traumatic winning. What United States Marines taught me about living a great life after trauma arrived. So I think that's it might change a little bit. It tends to change, but I like that. But for anybody who's been involved in trauma, when somebody like you says it, Ron, they're in disbelief.
Right. Disbelief. Well, I see that. I mean, I see it just amongst my peers and people that I know. They live in, and that's why I want to make this day different for me. Personally, and for my family, which we're going to do, because I see amongst my brothers and sisters the post on the anniversary of their father's death, and it's painful. You can see it. You can see like it was yesterday, and they relive that yesterday every year. And I don't want to live in that space. I don't want to – look, it's there. It's traumatic. It was horrible. I mean, it's a shitty way to start a life. And everything that followed. But I got to do it in honor of my father and to honor my father's legacy and in a manner that his mother can see and that his father was able to see until he passed at 96 in December. in a way that his grandkids see it. And that's the way that we're going to continue it. I'll just get to it. So today what I'm doing, and I haven't even gone live anywhere. This is the first place. All the web pages and everything are about to go up in a little bit later today. But we've got – so I was part of the Two Sides Project, and that's how we went over to Vietnam. That mission has continued on many different planes and, you know, bringing other people back to Vietnam, sons and daughters. But what we have recently started is a program called Peace Homes. And we are – and it was a brainchild of actually somebody else that went on the trip with us. She wanted to build a house near where her father was killed in the South. And so all the wheels were put in motion, and that was done, and they are in the process of building the first three. They were trying to raise money for one, and they've raised enough money to build three houses, or pretty close to it. Wow. So Margot, who runs the Two Sides Project, had worked with Susan, who was the thought of that, and she was back in Vietnam, and I pinged her while she was in Vietnam in February, and I said, it's time. So we have authorization, and we had to go through channels to get it all done, but we deal with, you know, private organizations with some approval, and we're going to be building a house in the village just outside the gates of Quezon on that red dirt for a poor family in the area. And that will be the first house. And that's going to be in honor of my father. And that house will stand. There's not going to be a name on it. There's not going to be a plaque. But we know what we've done. And we know that that will now be a legacy for that family. Because these homes stay in these families for years, generation after generation.
Like generations.
And it goes on and on. So that's... but that's not the end of the story. That's one house we're going to build. The second house we're going to build is in a town called Bac Lu. It's about a six-hour drive south of Saigon. No one ever hears about it. It's a pretty big town, actually. It's almost the southern tip. And that's where my girlfriend and, well, fiance, which I'm told the family. So, again, I'm talking to here. Everybody gets to hear. Was raised. She was born just north of Saigon. Her mother was Vietnamese, worked on a military base. Her father is an American serviceman, we believe, with the Army. We're pretty sure we know, we're through DNA and genealogy who it is, but we can't go public yet with the name until we, you know, connect all the dots. So here's somebody who was born out of war, who's an Amerasian, who was discriminated against, pushed around, delivering rice for her family at 13, 14 years old, walking 5 kilometers to do. Just a really strong individual that has that same outlook. Look, that was the past. Can't change it. Can't fix it. But it makes who we are. So what do we do today? So that home is going to be built in her province in honor of her mother and her father. And I think what better way to join the two sides than, you know, this new lifestyle that I live here in a Vietnamese household. Although she's half Irish and drinks whiskey like Irish. But, I get the best of both worlds.
Or the worst. Take your pick.
Well, it depends if you're fighting or drinking.
Exactly.
Sometimes both. But.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's what we're doing, and we're launching both of those homes today. We're going to start fundraising today. Here's the great part. Here's the part, and this is why we got involved. We got to assess the price of these homes because we got to start fundraising. To build a home where we're at near my father, the cost of that home is $3,500. The cost to build a home in the South is $2,800. So for $6,300, we're going to generationally change two families for life with a very small gesture. I toyed with, you know, this is really tough because we're all going through a tough time. Where does anybody know where any money's coming from? No one knows right now. Right. But I just thought it was still very important that we launch on this day. And whatever happens, happens. Whatever happens as we go forward, happens as we go forward, and we'll get it together. But we will build these houses. Here's a great thing that we discovered on the first three houses is we got a price. It was in the southern area in the Delta, and they came back at – because they figure out the cost per province and village precisely. So it came back. It's going to cost $3,000. So they get there, raise the funds, and they come back and says, you know what? It doesn't cost us $3,000. It's going to cost us $2,500. So that was a great indicator that said, hey, we overraised. Can we build another house? And so we'll see where this goes, but those were our initial estimates because where we're at in the Quezon area is more expensive. It's more rugged. It's a little tougher. There's not utilities. So 3,500 up north, 2,800 down south, 6,300, and we'll build some houses. Anything over than that, we will donate additional rice, which we did when we were in Vietnam last year on my second trip.
So, what does that mean? So you take the extra funds and just donate it to the village for some kind of rice fund or?
Yeah, so, and a touch on why I went back to Vietnam last year is that when Stephanie, my fiance, when her mother passed last year here, she lived here in California, we all flew back to Vietnam, and the funeral takes amazing. Buddhist funerals are 3 days long, and it starts the minute you get there. So it was a beautiful, overwhelming, emotional experience. But the family also, part of it is that you have to give to charity if you can. And so as a family, we all got together and bought, I think, about $1,000 worth of rice. It's like over a pallet, by the way. I mean, it was huge. And then through the temple, the poor are selected, and they're actually given tickets, and they all come, and we handed out rice for several hours. And so if we overraise, then, we want to do something very similar in that neighborhood. Because what another better way is, look, this one family got selected. That means other families did not get selected. What can we do? What can we do on behalf of that family to help the rest of the village? And that family would be the sponsor through our fundraising to be able to give out this rice in their new, really stature from being poor to being able to give through charity as well, even though we're sponsoring it. But again, I don't need the name and the recognition on that. It's what can we do for somebody and change their lives. I'll give you one other thing. Well, two things.
Well, wait 70%. A minute. I want to clarify one thing. Did you just say fiance for the first time publicly?
Today? Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Remember, these things are supposed to run in threes. So, you've announced that you're going to build two homes. You've announced that you have a fiance. So if you don't crank off one thing, you're leaving this you're leaving this triangle incomplete.
Yeah. Well, a lot has happened.
Hey, first of all, congratulations.
Thanks.
I had a chance to meet Stephanie, and what a wonderful girl. And the way their stories are intertwined is amazing. Stephanie growing up in Vietnam and I still remember you telling the story about what happened to her home. She lived in a two-story home, right?
No, in Vietnam, she had single-story homes in Vietnam. She had, the family had several. But I mean, her story is pretty detailed too. That's a whole other conversation.
Right. All right. Keep going. Continue.
So I forgot where I was at. I was about to make a point.
No, you were going to tell us something else that you hadn't told us yet.
I can't remember what it was.
All right, well,
we're talking about charity. We're talking about charity from the families being able to give charity.
Well, we were talking about Stephanie's mom being buried and handing out of rice, and that the family became the benefactor, and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then you were going to say something else. And then I said, wait a minute. Did you say fiance for the first time? And you said, yeah, I kind of did.
I forgot where I was going because I was writing a note, and now I forgot where I was at. So I'm sure it will come back on.
Right. While you're driving, while you're singing home, and you'll scream. All right. How do we help? Do you have a website set up? Is that stuff going active? What do we do? How do we find it?
Well, we're going to be active today. And I'm really in the final things. I got to get, you know, some approval on some verbiage because I'm, utilizing a nonprofit in there.
Right.
But you can always go on ronreyes.com, which has not been updated yet for this. But I will put a link on ronreyes.com. By the way, ronreyes.com also has, well, of course, it's feeds my ego because it's my name. But any of the newspapers I've been in, New York Times, Washington Post, both documentaries, because while we were in Vietnam for the Two Sides Project, a documentary was filmed there. That was also broadcast on PBS. And so all those links are on there, and you could read a little bit more.
So it's pretty much your I Love Me website?
Pretty much. Oh, there's pictures of me. You read about me.
All right. So you don't want anybody to be shocked, okay, when they go there.
Yeah, when they say it's me, yeah, it's me. So I'll put a link on there, and then we'll move from that way. Okay. We'll have a GoFundMe page, and then the one thing that can be immediately done is donations can be made directly to the twosidesproject.com, and that's the number two, so the twosidesproject.com, and you just put it in Peace Home for Ron and Stephanie, and they will get it to the right place and organize it. So,
okay,
that's
so hold
what we
on.
Launched today.
So it's the word the, then the number two, sides project, all one word, .com.
Yeah, let me, before I get all crazy, I better.
And again, I'll put these links in the post, so I'll make sure that they're right, so that you don't contribute to somebody else's village in Arkansas or something like that.
Right.
Not that that would be a bad thing, but we want you to help Ron out.
It's actually twosidesproject.com, so no the.
Got it.
Okay, and then you'll see about our trips, what we've done there. So those are the, so that's what we're working on here is is that next step. What do we do, and how do we contribute to those people? Going on. And then, I find myself living this very Vietnamese lifestyle, which is, I just find it so ironic that a country that was mysterious to me, I was pissed at, I didn't think I wanted to meet any of the people, yet I grew up literally 10 miles around away from the largest population of Vietnamese outside of Vietnam.
Right.
And never knew that anything like this existed. And I have such a much deeper understanding of the culture. Now, of course, an Americanized version of it, but going back to Vietnam and putting that all together, I don't know why that was all done and why we're here, but that's the case. I know a point I was going to make. So I know what I was going to say now. So back to Vietnam. The point I was going to make, not so much an announcement, but 70% of the population wasn't even alive during the Vietnam War. And they lived their life not really in the shadow of it, because Vietnamese people are pretty resilient. That was yesterday. We're going to move on to the next. Because remember, they fought the French. Then they fought us. Then they had to deal with Cambodia. Then they got to deal with famine. So there's a lot that they went on, and it's another part of history. And so in the province of where Quezon is, what struck me is there was 1,200 villages, and all but two villages were decimated. So two out of 1,200 survived during the conflict. During the Tet Offensive, 77 days, where my dad was pinned down and many others, and I saw the passing of
Then we kicked their ass. Don't forget that. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I heard from one of my my dad's brothers that somebody yelled "fix bayonets." He's like, "What the fuck? Fix bayonets?"
Exactly.
And that
that's the rest of the story. Okay, they got pinned down at the start, but at the end,
They were pulling and pushing back. Alpha 19 on Hill 64, getting overrun through the wire, pushing them back overnight, with support of Delta, just being able to drop mortars. So, we're for hours, and that's the veracity of a Marine fighter. That's a war fighter. These guys are utmost respect. And I always reference, Bravo, you know, Ken Rogers' film, Ken and Betty Rogers' film is just amazing. I think it shows those men, and we had a passing this week of Steve Weiss, I understand.
Oh, and, shit, man.
You know, and he just stands out in that film, the way he explains it. And so I'm forever touched by that as well. And every time I visit, I just don't think about my father. I think about everybody else there.
Well, that's where I met Ron. We met the first time at Ken Pipes' funeral.
Right.
And Ken Pipes was a company commander of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 26 Marines. And we're talking about the documentary Bravo. And Steve Weiss, for those of you that have seen it, he starts the movie. His voice, and you hear, you know, it dissolves into blackness and crickets, and you hear him talking about being on an OP and almost getting stepped on. And there's three parts that I'll never forget out of that documentary and that he's in. The first one is that there he's out on this OP, and these North Vietnamese army soldiers walk up and they're talking, and one of them almost steps on his forearm, and then they stop and they're standing there, and he's wondering, should I move my rifle? And he's hoping the other two guys don't snore or make a sound in their sleep because they're sound asleep, or the radio doesn't crackle because they're all going to die there, right? In some permutation of death, you know. And so that to me is just chilling. There's a second part where he's describing the payback attack. And I think it's that. And he asks Ken or Betty, I'm not sure who's filming, can we stop, as he gets emotional. And then he comes back and he says, this is not easy to talk about. And then that's the second part I'll never forget. And the third part I'll never forget is at the end, kind of at the very end of the documentary, these guys talk about the things, about what happened when they came back. And he talks about coming back to Southern California. I think he was at El Toro. And he talks about, you know, protesters outside the gate, spitting at him, holding signs, calling him a baby killer. And how difficult that was, too. And you know, that we throw the word hero around like, you know, like it doesn't mean too much. Talk about an incredible American who served his country as he thought he should, who paid a terrific price for doing that. And in that documentary teaches us a lot of things, a lot of lessons that we should keep with us for the rest of our lives. So I'm glad you brought his name up.
Yeah, I mean, he stood out to me in that documentary, and just the way he explained things, and you got the grasp of this kid was eating Wheaties one minute and he's in the middle of shit the next. That just pure hell. And you make decisions in a split second to change you for the rest of your life, and completely in awe of that, and then have to live with that, you know, for on and on. So, but I, going back to about the Quang Trinh province where Quezon is. So, during that 77-day siege, because I visited the Mine Action, I think, Resource Center, in that area, but more bombs were dropped in that 77 days than all sides during the World War II European campaign, the entire war, in 77 days. So that's why only two of those villages made it. There's still unexploded ordnance there. They still discover it. It's still they still find it. They still have to dispose of it. So this is a part of the country that still suffers from it, even if they don't know it or remember it or were born during it. But their families are definitely scarred from it. And so that was another reason really that we've got to do this and build this first house to do what we can. So there we are. That's what we're doing today.
Well, first of all, Ron, I just think your whole story is a wonderful example of, you know, a journey from trauma to joy, and that the dominant emotion that you feel today isn't sadness and trauma, although sadness is certainly a part of it, and it will always be and always should be a part of it. But what you've done with that is what I go around the country and tell people that exists, because most people don't know that exists, Ron, and you know that.
Right. We've had those conversations, you know, which you know, here's an interesting, and I'll just throw this kind of last thing out. So about a week before we all kind of locked down here, I quit a very good corporate job to go run out to do a few things on my own. You know, one of those things is it opens me up to be able to speak or go at a moment's notice to go present, do something, give back whenever I want, because I was unable to do that in the corporate environment. I couldn't just leave on a Tuesday at 2. You know, I couldn't just fly out of to another state to go do something. So I wanted to be able to do that and give back and do that sort of thing. So I had left my job and running a couple of different things, and the world kind of falls apart. And back several years ago, I was in manufacturing. I was we made like a mechanic style glove. We were major sponsor of drag racing. We were NASCAR, IndyCar, all these things. Past life, never thought about it. My friend, who's continued with this and, you know, started his own company, has been doing this for a while and doing well, just drops that he's making KN94 mask right now. And so here I am, all of a sudden, you know, importing millions of these masks, trying to get them to, you know, the front line. We're about half the price of everybody else. And so that's, you know, my mission is to, right now, while we're doing all of this, is so while everybody's locked down and unable to do things, these opportunities have come my way, these things to reflect and be grateful for what we have, you know, whether I do any, you know, we sell any or not, it really doesn't matter. But it's that I've been able to, you know, make a positive out of whatever I can. And that's kind of always my goal is a negative. How do we turn it into a positive? What could we learn from those things? You know, instead of just sitting here and worrying, it can't change anything. So that's it. That's where it's going right now in the last few weeks for us.
So tell me about the mask business. How is that going? I have a feeling that you're not going to have a problem moving those on the international market. It seems to be a pretty decent demand for them.
Well, there is. I mean, there's so much bureaucracy and everything else. So, you know, for me, you know, quality is utmost important. So there's a lot of knockoffs right now. There's a lot of stuff flying around. There's large quantities are being stopped and inspected and reallocated by the government. So it's that, you know, there's just everybody wants them, right? Everybody wants to do things. But getting heard in the noise is interesting, because everybody's getting all these phone calls. So how do you get through the noise so they understand that, hey, I'm not somebody who's buying from somebody else who's buying from somebody else, or I'm not buying directly from a factory I just found. I'm manufacturing it. I have quality control. I have shipping in place. We have air freight, all of those sort of things. So it's been a very fun project. I can't even tell you how much I learned, something that I was never doing before. I mean, sure, I sold gloves, but masks were different. And dealing with all levels of government. And so we've made some inroads, and we'll be supplying, you know, quite a few. And I'm trying to bring in some separately, just so I have it available for friends and family, you know, some sort of inventory, because everything's being, I'm not even touching it. Right. So, you know, I feel like we're helping any way we can, because I'm seeing prices out there still that are just, it's obscene. There's no reason. There's no reason people need to be charged these amount of money.
Well, at some point there will be a moment of reckoning, and it might be in the aftermath of all of this.
Probably.
But I can tell you there's a small portion of hell that is devoted to people that exploit the misfortune of others. And yeah, and at some point, that story will be written. Yeah. And then the people who saw an opportunity to not mark their, you know, product up, a little bit and still, you know, supply it to the world. But
right.
they sought to exploit. There'll be a reckoning at some point, but won't be anytime soon. And you'll be on the good side of that too, Ron.
Well, that's why, you know, we just do what's right. And the goal here at the end is not only to get everything in front of everybody, but there's a nice little other thing that's happening is that all our part numbers are set up somewhere. We're in all these places. So let's do the right thing now. As soon as air freight stops and we can ship, let's drop the prices to the right place. And let's get what we need out there, you know, the other things that we make. And those are fun because I love design. I love all the things we've done. I've had so much fun making, like, you know, driver's gloves for racing or extrication gloves for fire rescue, which was my baby, actually. I mean, that was my whole thing. I called friends. This is, another interesting thing. I read a book called The Coil, and real fast what that is, it's somebody that I had worked with. I didn't know much about this because we didn't interface that much, but it talks about how you run across people in your life and sometimes, you know, you may never run across them again. And then other times they come back into your life and have stronger bonds and everything you've learned always kind of relates. And my whole life, when I look back, is woven that way. And so now just with this, I'm calling people I haven't talked to in 10 years that I used to work with and sell things to. And remember I said being heard in the noise?
Right.
Well, I haven't heard my name forever, but we've shared so many beers and stories and had fun. They call immediately, and it's not, hey, what do you have? It's, how's your family? What are you doing? What's been up? They know why that I've got something. But so even in the midst of working with, you know, KN95 mask, I have reconnected with so many friends and colleagues that I've had over the years, and that's been an absolute joy. You know, it's fun to navigate it this way and do what we can. That's kind of always my outlook. You know, what can we learn? What can we do? What's the positive out of it?
Well, let me tell you, I mean, you're a great example. But I have to tell you this. I think it's so important, right, that people like me find people like you and that we talk and then, you know, and then – because people like you, Ron, that have lived through what you've lived through, when you say trauma to joy, that's a show that stops the show. Like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? That's not even possible.
Right.
And when somebody when somebody like you looks and says, "Look, I'm standing here today, and I'm living proof of it," which is my message. Look, I didn't come here. I didn't go down this path to write a book. I went down this path to try to survive, to try to help myself.
Right.
I'm a consumer before I'm anything else. Before I'm an evangelist, I'm a consumer, and that message is so powerful. But I just want to congratulate you. You know, someplace in heaven, there's a pretty proud dad that's looking down on what you're doing, what you've done with all of this, and how you're using your father's story, the story of Ron Reyes, to the good, and how you're changing lives, how you're touching lives, and now you're going to go back and build homes, and your fiance, congratulations, home, and in the place where your father was killed, really as an offering of peace, right? To the people that lived there, the people that bore the brunt of the war and really had nothing to do with it. And I can't say well done loud enough. I can't say it often enough. You truly are the personification of what it is to be a post-traumatic winning. And God bless you and congratulations. And you know, whenever you want to come on, all you got to do is yell. Anything we can do to help you do what you do, I'm obviously more than happy to do. And I've got an email for you. Hey, Mac, I just logged on to twosidesproject.com. It has a tab for donations, but I don't see how I donate specifically to Ron's project. How do I do that?
Well, so right now that's kind of a catch-all because the Two Sides Project is bigger than my project.
Right.
They're running on many different fronts with many different initiatives. So to do that, you could simply in this form, just reference Ron Reyes, Peace Home, whatever it is, whatever, so they know it's me, it's fine.
Okay. So when I'm at the website, I click on donate, it asks for my email, and then number 4 says additional information.
Yeah. Let me go down here too, cause I'm gonna go check out what you're looking at.
Okay. And so in that additional information, I'll have the opportunity to put in, please,
right,
please apply my donation to Ron Reyes's project.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah. I'm pretty loud in that group, so they know who I am. I was pretty, that was the same with the Vietnam trip. We were all in awe, but I was almost like a little kid in that whole thing. I was just in vocal about it all. So yes, you just reference me and it'll get to where it needs to go. It'll get authorized the right direction, so it goes to the right initiative. Later on, I'll have a GoFundMe page that will feed right into that, and ronreyes.com, all of those things.
Got it. All right. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you this morning that you need to tell people?
We covered more, as always. We cover way more than I ever anticipated we're going to talk about, because that's how it works on this.
Okay, that's
show.
Actually, just so you know, that's a trick question. That was the right answer, by the way. Anyway, on a day that that your family commemorates the selfless sacrifice of your father, Lance Corporal, right?
No, Private First Class.
PFC Ron Reyes.
PFC.
United States Marine Corps.
Yeah. And I don't know what he did to be a PFC after he was in there for a year, but it must have been great.
You earned that title, right? PFC second or third award, maybe.
Right. I think that's probably the case.
Yeah. Hey, shit happens. What company was he in?
Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines.
Delta Company, first killed in action today, 52 years ago, as a member of Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines. And he was en route to help another Marine when he was killed.
Correct.
And so God bless your dad, Ron. And as I said, someplace he's looking down, extremely proud of what you're doing. Congratulations to you on this work. Congratulations on your engagement to Stephanie. And let me know when all this stuff dies down, we'll have to go out and have dinner. And
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Nice.
I mean, we only live a few miles apart, so
you bet.
No use. I mean, no reason we don't. So thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And thanks for letting me. I wasn't even ready to go completely live on the internet, and you're like, well, you got to come talk about it, and I got to tell us first. I'm like, damn it. All right.
I know. Come on, man. You know the rules. All right.
I know. So I'll be here live probably in the next few hours.
Got it. Congratulations. Right. Well done.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Have a great day. Thanks, everybody.
Uh-huh. That is Ron Reyes here on a how about that for cool on a Monday, right? I mean, again, anytime you think your life gets difficult, I think all you got to do is look at the lives of other people around you who, certainly have it more difficult than you do. And most of us don't have to look very very far for that. And let me just tell you, from the first time I interviewed Ron, I mean, his story to me stood out. And one of the coolest part is, for me, is one of the coolest parts for me has been, I was talking to him about what I did and this whole idea of post-traumatic winning. And he was all about it. He was all about it. And that whole phrase, trauma to joy, for whatever reason, animates people. And like I said, it's so powerful, though, when somebody with Ron's life experiences, when it speaks to them. And when you're in that blackness, you have no idea that that place is even there. And so to be somebody who finds it and then encourages other people that, hey, you can walk down this path too. These are the things that you got to know. And even while he was talking, I was thinking about the beautiful parts of post-traumatic winning. And today there is sadness. But if you understand post-traumatic winning and you know you're never going to get over it, right, it's okay. It's expected, right? It's usual, it's normal, and it's customary, right? And it's appropriate that today is. you know, sad. What would he have become, right? Had he come home and lived his life. And so all that, to me, that's the beauty of all that I've learned from all the different veterans that have come on All Marine Radio for closing in on 4 years now. And that's the beauty of what has become post-traumatic winning, is that all of this stuff is true. It's valid. It is very blue collar. And you know, when you have people like Ron Reyes that exemplify it, it's not a very hard stuff. So congratulations to him. And again, we remember the sacrifice of his father today, PFC Ron Reyes, 52 years ago today, killed in action in the Republic of Vietnam in the service of his country. So we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.